Disrupting Japan, I mean, we do talk about the startups themselves, but what I'm always trying to do is I'm always trying to tell a story through the lens of this particular startup. Like what is the social problem they're addressing? Sure. What is this? What trend is this highlighting? You know, why is this important? Right.
Hey there. Welcome to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Katalan. This is my podcast about Japan, but it's not just your run-of-the-mill, cool Japan podcast. I want to explore a side of Japan besides sushi and sumo, anime and video games. I'm here to extrapolate and meditate with the local people that your travel guide probably doesn't touch on. People that are hungry for making it, and people that have made it. This podcast is my talks with them. All right, welcome everyone. If you are new to this podcast, come on in, sit back and relax, and thank you for joining in. Well, first off, I want to give a huge shout out for all the fans and the people who have donated to my Ko-fi page. If you don't know, I have a Ko-fi page that's helped support my podcast. This is what keeps it running, and I just wanted to say thank you guys. I'm happy that you guys continue to listen, and I'm happy to hear people responding to saying that this helps them get to know more about some of the people that live in Japan. So that makes me happy and makes me smile to know that people are listening, and it's all for you. So I do have a Ko-fi page. You can find me on ko-fi.com/Made in Japan Podcast. If you feel free, if you want to donate whatever amount you'd like to keep this podcast going. This podcast is really for you, you know, having me giving the chance to hear and listen to stories of the people who are living and working it in Japan. So yes, yeah, you can find me on my Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/Made in Japan Podcast. You can also check me out. I am a very heavy Instagram user. Although I also have a Facebook page too that I also do keep in touch with, but definitely you can also hit me up through my Instagram. It's Facebook and Instagram, of course, is at Made in Japan Podcast. And if you have any emails or you have something you want to share, a person that would be an interesting, that has an interesting story to tell or and that lives in Japan, feel free to hit me up in my Gmail, which is japanmademepodcast@gmail.com. So yeah, I just wanted to say thank you all for continuing to listen. And maybe some of you thought that I just kind of just disappeared into the ether this year. I've been trying to focus on my life day by day, and then trying to, you know, think about how to continue this podcast. And so if you have listened to my programming note earlier this week, you will know that I'm going to be changing it up a bit. And the next few episodes, I will be doing some online remote interviews / hanging out and talking with other Japan-based podcasters. And I am excited to kick off this week with Tim Romero from Disrupting Japan Podcast. If you don't know Tim, and if you don't know Disrupting Japan Podcast, and you are interested about Japanese entrepreneurs or Japanese-based entrepreneurs, you are totally missing out of a wealth of information. I consider Tim to be one of the OGs of podcasting in Japan. And I would say he's probably one of the first people that was the full-time podcaster in Japan, you know, ever since, how many years ago now? But yes, lucky for me that Tim had an opportunity to chat with me. I will have to say, since this was my first online remote recording. I've gone through a lot of technical trouble, and yeah, it's going to be like a growing pain for the next few episodes, but yes, just to pull back the curtain a bit, I did go through some difficulties with the software I was using for this online recording. So I need to warn all of you, and please be kind and to what I'm doing. I'm trying my best with this. And anyways, you're going to be hearing a little bit of an echo from my end as Tim is talking. And I really tried my best to fix up most of what of these echoes. So, but besides that, I thought I highly recommend, even before you listen to my interview with Tim, to even just download and subscribe to Disrupting Japan podcast. Without further ado, let's get in and have and listen to my talk with Tim Romero, Disrupting Japan podcast. And here we go. So I want to welcome here on this podcast a Tim Romero from the host of Disrupting Japan podcast. Tim, thank you so much for coming and doing this with me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem. I first off, I wanted to talk to you about, I hear, from your website, I heard and I read that you were an aspiring musician. Can you talk about that more?
I was. The very first time I came to Japan, I came as a musician. But this was a while ago. This was back in 1988. So a Japanese record company brought me to Japan. I'm a singer and a vocal arranger, and I play guitar and a little bit of piano. My music career was short, even by Japanese standards. I ended up having a lot of fun, but music career didn't work.
How did you end up meeting this person, where did that start?
To be strictly precise, my very first time in Japan was, when I was in college, and my second year of university, my physics lab partner, their parents lived in Japan, and he was like, just mentioned to me, like, yeah, his parents were having trouble finding someone to take care of the house when, their family had like a home leave back in the States. And I was like, me, I'll do it. I will fly to Tokyo. I will watch your house for 3 months. And he's like, are you serious? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm dead serious. And I didn't know anything about Japan. It's just like, I'm not going to pass that chance up. Huge house, like all to myself, this beautiful house in the middle of Mejiro. And I just had to like feed the dogs and water the plants. And, I spent, 3 months just hanging out, enjoying myself, and I ended up playing guitar with this band in Japan just for fun. And they ended up getting a record contract, and through that connection and the people I'd met playing with them, the record company wanted me to like stay, and I'm like, no, I'm really gonna go back and finish university first. And so when I graduated, it was like, ooh, back to Japan, gonna be a rock star. Yeah, didn't quite work out.
You're trying to be big in
Japan.
But
I ended up staying for 3 years after that because, go ahead. I told everyone I was going to Japan to become a rock star, and you can't like just, go back after a couple of months.
That's hilarious. But beforehand, were you interested in Japanese culture before you went to Japan?
No, I didn't really know much about Japan. It was this awesome chance that, my physics lab partner just mentioned, and that just a raw coincidence. a happy coincidence.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm in the same vein with you because I, you know, as you know, there's a lot of people that come, especially the foreigners that come to live or plan to live for a long time in Japan, tend to have a, you know, they're very interested in the Japanese culture, whether it's the ancient culture, like the music, or even studying the language or the anime or whatever, anything, or even video games. I'm very similar with you that for me, it was the same thing. It was kind of like an offer to teach English in Japan. And I was like, what, Japan? Because originally, I didn't want to go to this country. I wanted to go to Europe to live. And it just kind of just, you know, turned into a 180, like, you know, I came here and I'm like, oh my gosh, this country's amazing. And then I just continued to live here. Like,
yeah, it's, you know, the same with me. I mean, maybe 7-8 years ago, there was a time where I actually had a really good job offer in San Francisco. And I decided, no, I'm staying in Japan. But before then, I never really consciously decided I want to live in Japan forever. I mean, it was just, I don't know, there was a new project or a new company or something exciting going on right here, right now. Right. And so I stayed a few more years. Right. And 30 years later, here I am, you know, it's
right. And time really does fly when you're here, especially in Tokyo. So, so I want to start from how I learned about you, because a year and a half ago, I started this podcast without knowing who's doing any type of podcast in Japan, seriously. And you, when I was searching web, you know, I basically just searched on the internet, like, okay, Japan-based podcasters. And your website came up, Disrupting Japan Podcast. And you, I want to say, you mentioned something about how it was hard to monetize in Japan as a podcaster.
I think I've talked about it a number of times because it is something I get asked about a lot.
Yeah.
So I did actually Disrupting Japan for a little over a year was it was my job. It was my full-time job.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I was the first professional podcaster in Japan, meaning podcasting was my only job. But it is hard. It's a lot of work.
And I gravitated toward what you were doing. I'm like, wow, this is pretty interesting. So, yeah.
What little success I had as a musician, quite frankly, is not so much due to my musical ability, but just due to the fact that I spent 70% of my time hustling and booking gigs and setting up auditions and just doing the business side of things. And podcasting, man, it's the same way. You know, you'll spend 30% of the time doing the fun stuff and 70% of the time doing ad sales.
Yes. Yes. This is where I think when I started reading about you, you know, when you talked about it in your about page, I started connecting with you because for me, I was raised as an underground musician. I was a starving musician too, growing up in Connecticut. But I was more into like the punk rock, hardcore scene back in the day. And I
I love that. I grew up with that. I grew up in D.C. in the
You're in D.C. right?
The 9:30 Club. And I don't know how many times.
Oh right. And so that was something that was very I grew up with since I was like 15 years old, the encompassing that underground community and the whole DIY culture. That DIY culture to do it yourself really inspired me to start something entrepreneurial. And that connection, as you mentioned about how music is very similar to podcasting, I really connect with that. I really believe that it's very close. You know, the nature of it is really
absolutely
close.
I mean, there certainly is a performative aspect to podcasting. And I think that, I'm really self-aware enough to know that podcasting is filling much of the same artistic need that music did, in what seems like another lifetime now. There's something just incredibly fun and fulfilling, and you don't mind spending truly ridiculous number of hours editing down podcasts in post-production.
Right. But so I guess that brings to how did you start Disrupting Japan? Like, what was that spark? Because your podcast is really diving in and delving into the world of startups, right? People, entrepreneurs who are trying to make a new business in Japan. Where did that come from? Like, where did that spark come from? Well, was it when you were still here in Tokyo, or I don't know?
Well, no, I was in Tokyo at the time. Startup, I was running market entry for a San Francisco startup called Engine Yard.
Okay.
Honestly, the idea of like, gee, I should run a podcast. It really was just one of those things that came to me. But I'm someone who's constantly starting projects. People talk about serial entrepreneurs. I'm more of like a parallel entrepreneur because I always seem to have like three or four different things going on at the same time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hmm. And then when one of them takes off, I have to quit all the others, which is frustrating, and rewarding at the same time. But podcasting was just one of those kind of, sure, why not? But I never imagined it would get as big as it has. Oh, I thought it would just be me sitting down with my founder friends and talking about startups and doing business. And I thought it might, you know, have 100 or 200 listeners and it would be a success. But I was saying, you know, these days we're up to about 10,000 listeners around the world, which is just...
That's amazing.
I know. It freaks me out sometimes, honestly.
I wonder, like, did you start with a blog first or?
Kind of. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've had blogs. I've had columns in several newspapers and magazines over the last 20 years or so writing about innovation, like, or more specifically, kind of how innovation impacts society. So this has always been like a special topic to me. And Disrupting Japan, I mean, we do talk about the startups themselves, but what I'm always trying to do is I'm always trying to tell a story through the lens of this particular startup. Like what is the social problem they're addressing? Sure. What is this? What trend is this highlighting? You know, why is this important?
Right. Can you explain a little bit of your earlier startups that you did in Japan? I'm curious what you were doing.
Sure. Well, all of my startups have been B2B enterprise software. That's just what I seem to be good at.
I wonder.
The first one back in 1998 was an e-commerce company. I mean, it was an e-commerce platform that involved the hardware and the software and everything. Sold that one to Digital Garage. The second one was a company that did document classification. I had a company that did customs forms processing and analysis, and a company that did inventory management. It was a SaaS before we had the term SaaS. Back then, we called it ASPs.
I see. So this was during like the dot-com bubble era, right?
The first one was during the dot-com bubble, and I kind of sold that company as the dot-com bubble was bursting around me. And the others have been after that. The last real startup that I managed to raise money for and have full-time employees was probably back in, 2006, 2007. And after that, I've been mostly like investing and I've had a couple of startup attempts that just didn't quite hit, you know, that escape velocity, but I'm a big believer in kind of, you know, recognizing when something's not working and being willing to pivot or shut something down or move on to the next thing.
So I wanted to get into the business that you were working beforehand, Limousine International. I was, you know, before we were on air for this, I was just kind of just wanted to tell you, like, I was like interested in like what this company was really about. So could you talk about that a little
bit? Yeah, that's, Yeah, I'm not sure they even exist anymore. I should really go by and check on them. It's been so long. Sure. But right. They were a type of company that don't exist so much in Japan. The internet has kind of killed them off. But what they did is they would go and buy interesting things, whether it was distressed lumber or antique cowboy boots or Indian jewelry or coffee table style books, and then they would sell it to brand shops throughout Japan. It was Limousine International had absolutely nothing to do with cars. The president just loved that particular word. I spent some time as a buyer for everything from Indian jewelry to cowboy boots to distressed lumber. It was a fun couple of years.
Well, and there was there a big market in Japan for this at that time?
There was. But I mean, like I said, the internet kind of shut that down. When anyone can go online and like look, you know, you can get cheap shipping anywhere from anywhere in the world. Going to Google or Amazon, you can see what products are available anywhere in the world. But before that, back in the 90s, that just didn't exist. And there were thousands and thousands of these cool little tiny shops filled with items imported from all over the world.
Right.
And it would seem like really random stuff like ceramic tiles from, you know, some particular town in England. And it was it was fun and random and you know, kind of cool. I didn't make a whole lot of money there, but I mean, it was fun.
Well, what was like the weirdest item or the weirdest, like, I want to say artifact. Should I say artifact? I don't know. But the weirdest item that you've seen.
There was a lot of things that just didn't make sense why people wanted them at first, like the old lumber. We would go out and find barns that were about to be demolished and just like buy them. And we would sell this old weathered lumber to interior design shops who wanted to like use it in restaurants and things.
I was going to say that's like practically hipster wood.
Yeah, it definitely was hipster wood. There was a real hipster component in a lot of what we were buying. It all had kind of counterculture. The antique baseball stuff went over really, really well.
What?
Okay. Old hats and bats and balls and gloves and but the strangest kind of story was actually something we ended up buying in Japan. So we were looking for a couple of years. Like, we were looking for a coffee table book on cowboy boots. And we just couldn't find one. And we eventually did find one. It turned out to be this Japanese guy. It made it his life's work to like photograph and document the history of cowboy boots. And it was meticulous and beautiful. And so what we did though, but we couldn't sell it that way. So what we did is we translated it into English, re-imported it back into Japan and then sold it. And we sold like so many copies of this book that no one was interested if it was in Japanese, but once it was in English.
Exactly. There's some sort of like authenticity.
Yeah, and he adopted a very American sounding pen name. I can't remember what it was now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I guess I want to move on. How are you doing these days with the podcast? Like this is one of my goals. I want to just get in touch with people who are doing podcasts in Japan, and I want to find out what's happening with you and your podcast during these times, because it's kind of hard, or could be beneficial for.
It was hard for me. Awesome. I did hit a speed bump with COVID. I've always been. I've always done interviews face to face. I tend to bring some beers and like that's why a large number of my interviews, the first thing is like cheers. So I had some troubles moving on online just in terms of meaning of developing that rapport. And also I like had technical troubles. I recorded like one really good interview and lost all but the first 15 minutes of it, and it's but we're back on track now.
Yeah. Tim, I just want to pull back the curtain just a little bit because you are my first guest that I'm doing remotely, and recording. So, yeah, I guess
Oh, all right.
I guess congratulations. I don't know.
It's a pain, isn't
it's
it?
Really hard because I'm very similar to you.
It really is. It looks easy.
Because I'm much more.
I thought it was going to be a piece of cake too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm much more like you. Like, you know, straight up face to face. I want to see the reactions. I'm all about just, you know, connecting with the people. So, yeah, congratulations. Yeah. So. However, you have been putting out some really amazing episodes, and one episode that I listened to very recently this year, it's the one that you called Your Japanese Textbooks Are Lying to You, and that really hit home to me.
Back on that one. Yeah, I just don't, that never set right with me.
Right.
And perhaps it is I don't know, as an American or as a particularly independent American, the whole, like, you know, giving respect to those of higher social status never quite sat right with me. And but yeah, that's not what's really going on. I think a far more accurate and far more useful way of looking at it is the honorifics and humble forms. It's a kind of role play.
Right. And I 100% agree what you were talking about in terms of, you know, the Japanese keigo or like the politeness of using the Japanese words in different situations. And just to tell the listeners, like, in Japanese textbooks, usually the description of keigo means a sense of, they would always describe it as a sense of giving respect to the person or giving respect to someone at a higher status, but you mentioned something different.
It has nothing to do with the status of the individuals involved. It's strictly the role you're playing in that situation. And the respect being offered, it's not respect to the individual you're speaking with. It's kind of a respect for the system as a whole. And the example I use that seems to resonate with at least a lot of Americans is that it's similar to military protocol, where just because someone salutes an officer, doesn't mean they respect or like that particular officer. You know, they might think he's a total asshole, but they respect the system, right? You know, they're showing respect for the institution. And I think that's closer to what's happening in Japan.
Right.
It's using the correct forms. It's showing respect for, you know, the polite, orderly, well-mannered society rather than any one individual.
I want to say the listeners that I have, I really suggest to listen to Tim's episode on that. The specific episode, especially if you're planning to come to Japan or learning Japanese, I think that specific episode really hits well in terms of how we communicate with each other.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, man. Because I actually had many situations in my life, and you've mentioned some different stories that you've had and you've experienced, whether it's shopping. For me, it was like going to the bank. You know, just the hardships of going to a bank and like settling or creating a new account or planning to transfer money. I had to do specific things that, you know, required the sense of being polite. But if I couldn't understand what the bank teller was saying, I had to go and work around it and say, you know, hey, listen, I do not understand the process of, you know, transferring money or whatever I was doing. I don't remember actually specifically, but it was totally that situation of protocol. Telling me, the customer, you know, like, what to do.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's really tempting as foreigners to like want to ask them to say, hey, come on, can you speak to me in regular Japanese, please? But that's kind of... But that's kind of an unreasonable, that's like an unreasonable request, because they're not showing respect to you. They're showing respect to the system. So if you say, don't speak polite Japanese, don't use honorifics, you're saying don't respect the system. And like, you are not the point, you know? But yeah, it's hard. And like, I think that's part of just living in Japan. Every once in a while, you'll run into a situation where you just don't have the vocabulary to do something. Like, I mean, the first time you go to a hospital and have to describe your symptoms, you suddenly realize you don't know any of the words for this.
And you're just like, it just hurts.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of pointing.
It hurts. It's so true, so true. But I really encourage the listeners that, you know, people who are interested in studying Japanese, that episode really like hit close to home for me. So, but moving on, can you talk about what things that you would like to do in the future with your podcast?
You know, I'm not sure. The sixth anniversary show is coming up in a couple of weeks. It's just my vision for the podcast has changed so much from the first few months where I thought it was just going
hurts.
To be me sitting down with my founder friends, which I guess in a way it still is,
for
but
sure.
With a much bigger audience. Commercial for a while, right. I tried to focus on market entry for a while.
Really,
so I don't know what it's going to be like 5 years from now. I sure as hell hope I'll still be running it, but I think the podcast will evolve with the startup community in Japan. Things have changed so much in the last 6 years. It's astounding. And 6 years from now, it's going to be different still. I'll give you a specific example that I find really interesting. So when I first started this, in the first year or two, one of my favorite questions to ask was sort of the origin story, because everyone had a story about how difficult it was to start their business and how their wife or their mother-in-law or their parents were against it. And, you know, one fellow was kind of saying like, yeah, he had to like pawn his wife's jewelry in order to start his company. And he was like, you know, Tim, there are some things you should never do. But that's changed now. I can't ask that question because when I do, people are like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, my friends thought it'd be a good idea and I had investors who would put up the money for it. So like, why not? Like, oh, okay then. and that's great for the ecosystem, but it's not, you know, compelling storytelling, right?
Right. But don't you think it's funny? I'm sure you know this. I wonder if it's like a Japanese cultural habit, but I love in Japan, especially when you see it in media, like when you see whether it's like a startup or like a person's new business in opening up in your local community. I love that like Japanese really are attracted when they listen to like the full story, the background of that specific owner or entrepreneur. I wonder, is it only in Japan? But like, because back home in America, I don't really think about that so much. But here in Japan, people love those stories, like the where they come from.
It is much more important. I think that I don't want to say just the U.S., but maybe the U.S. is more extreme in this. There's a real commodification, and I don't mean that commodification in the sense of the product. Getting the product, get the result is the point, right? And like the story behind it, like, well, if it helps sell it, that's interesting. If it doesn't help sell it, then let's forget the story. And I think Japan, there's just more of a sense of why is this important? And most corporate web pages start out with this kind of emotional, inspirational message from the founder. I think it's part of Japanese culture. It's important to explain why you're doing what you're doing, not just what you're doing.
Right. Maybe I could be wrong, but I always think it goes back to how in Japan, the process of doing something is much more important than the result. I wonder, maybe I'm generalizing too much, but I always find this in Japanese culture, and I really respect it, that people care about the process and finding the different options to seek a solution. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but like that's how I see in Japan. Like, if you want to do something, people expect you to do 200% of that, you know, that venture or that endeavor that you're trying to do, and people expect you to do it well and you know, enjoy the process of doing it. I wonder if, what do you think? Am I wrong? I'm not sure.
No, I think that's true. No, I mean, I think that's true. I think that efforts and good intentions count for a great deal in Japan. I think that's like, I talked about this in the Keigo episode too, that, you know, my Keigo is not particularly good. I make tons of mistakes, but most people, most Japanese sincerely appreciate the fact that I'm making a good faith effort to try to get it right.
Right.
Even though I'm almost certainly butchering it in most cases.
But yeah, I just think Japanese really do appreciate that effort, and they have a very, they're very sensitive to pick up on that. I want to talk more with you, Tim, about, like, you know, what you're going to do in the future. But I know you have a lot, you're a busy man, and I know you want to do so many things with your podcast. But I'm just so happy that you can come on and talk about what you're doing. And I want to just keep promoting you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been my pleasure. I really enjoy talking about these, and you're a great host.
Well, I want to definitely, for sure, in the near future, I would hope to do like a face-to-face interview. But for now, seriously, thank you so much for being on it.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully the world will return to the way it was in the before time, when we can like sit down and have a beer.
Exactly. That's all I want to do. Just have a beer and then just have a lovely chat. But seriously, Tim, thank you so much for doing this. And thank you for being one of my first. You are my first remote guest.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, man. Take care. Once again, big thank you to Tim for taking the time out of his busy schedule and doing this episode with me. Tim, I want to let you know, when all this is done, all this pandemic stuff has cleared away and the dust has settled, I definitely owe you a beer for coming out and doing this with me. So keep on keeping on. You are listening to Made in Japan podcast, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. I hope you guys enjoyed this show, and I hope that you guys are going to be fired up for my next episode in this continuing chat with other podcasters that are based in Japan. Till next time, peace out and be well. Take care.